This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 6th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Communication and Confusion. This lecture is 59 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to talk to you this morning concerning communication and confusion. The thing from which confusion comes and why it comes there and how this interacts with communication. As we know and as we can demonstrate with the greatest of ease, communication is the universal solvent. You take any mass of energy and you communicate through it, and it will disappear. Now, very possibly, if one Thetan got on one side of Earth, and another Thetan got on the other side of the Earth, and one of the Thetans said hello, with the intention to communicate to the live form on the other side of the Earth, the other Thetan, and the other Thetan said okay, and the first Thetan received that okay, and the second Thetan said hello, and the first Thetan said, receiving that, okay. And the second Thetan received that, and they kept this up, back and forth. You wouldn't have any earth left. Now, this is more than theoretical. It's demonstrable. Why no one discovered this, and yet sought at the same time for the universal solvent, I wouldn't know unless it's because they thought the universal solvent would be matter. If everything has to be material, then of course the universal solvent would be material, and so they would never discover it. One of the more fabulous proceedings. All right. If the universal solvent is communication, then the universal solvent is live form. Therefore, if the troubles of the world are to disappear, they are not going to disappear because of an injection needle. They are not going to disappear because of an atomic bomb. They will disappear only when and if there are enough live people around and live Thetans around to as-is them. Now, there are two strata. There's the strata of no game, which is very high, and the strata of too much game, which is just a little bit low, which attract our attention very solidly. But below the strata of too much game, there's also the strata of no game at all. Somewhere in there, there's an optimum band for game. But no game is possible in the absence of live form. Call to your attention that brainwashing reduces the liveness of an individual. It does not necessarily change his loyalty, make him have corns, or bring him into a better state of I will arise. But it certainly, definitely does reduce his liveness. Why? Because it cuts communication. Therefore, where you cut communications, you reduce the liveness. It's as simple as that. Communication is cut, the liveness is cut. That's all there is to it. All right. Morality, ethics, and all other high-level rules of the game are only possible when addressed by live form. And when you reduce live form, you wipe out the rules of the game and get a confusion. You get criminality, politics, brainwashing, Hollywood. You get anything. Why? Because you have an inversion on the fact that we are all individuals. And everyone has become so individual that no one has any understanding of any other one. And therefore, everyone is an only one, and each only one is now in the precarious position of going on being the only one till the end of time. This fascinating, utterly fascinating picture is brought about by this belief, this stable datum. Very, very interesting stable datum. And that is, the communication is impossible. Got that? Now that is the basic stable datum which creates the dwindling spiral. Simultaneously with this, we would have this computation. Survival in this universe is impossible, since without communication, the amount of energy and masses which are collected do not as is. We leave everybody in a permanent trap on a not too low level. That trap becomes criminality. What responsibility have I for my fellow man and this game? None. So I'll get elected or something. I'll do anything. Why? Why should I worry about my fellow man? I'm not in communication with him. Why not kill him? Nothing to me. And there goes mores. There go ethics. There's criminality. You carefully watch any political scene for a third dynamic view of this, and you will discover that at that moment, when the common citizen no longer feels that he can communicate with the center of that government, that that government will descend at that moment into criminality, and has done so time after time, and is doing so at this moment. When the government itself feels that it has no responsibility for each and every individual being within its domain, a reign of immorality, unethical conduct sets in. Exactly how does it set in now? Communication is impossible. Got it? It's so simple. Communication is impossible. Now, why does anybody embark upon as thoroughly wretched a line of conduct as brainwashing? Why would he? Why would anybody embark upon prefrontal lobotomies? Electric shock, drugs in the administration of insanity. Why would anybody do this? It's because he's gone insane, that's why. And why has he gone insane? Because he says communication with this being is impossible. Unless I use force. Now, just below that, unfortunately or fortunately for this individual, communication is impossible, force or no force sets in. See how it goes then? The dwindling spiral is no need for communication, in communication with considerable assistance from MEST, in communication if we work at it real hard, in communication. Well, communication is impossible without MEST intervention. Communication is impossible without very heavy force. Communication is impossible without pain, duress, and agony. Communication is impossible Communication's impossible. Communication's impossible. And he's gone. Interesting. Now that's the dwindling spiral right there. Now brainwashing is where the anxiety to reach the center of consciousness has become so great and so corrupted and so insane that they seek to reach with force the center of consciousness itself, to wit, an interiorized Thetan. They know they can't reach him any other fashion, so they believe that this fashion can reach him. In a little lighter vein, common punishment is an effort to reach. Now, this is a fantastic thing, because communication can only exist in the presence of the reality of the situation, the knownness of terminals, and affinity. And what kind of affinity is it on the part of one man to cut out the prefrontal lobes of another man? So do you think there's any communication there, or any communication will result? No, not a bit. None whatsoever will result. But on the contrary, an inhibition of communication will result. And if we were to take a person who is already insane and further inhibit his ability to communicate, he would become more insane. And every single test that's ever been made by anybody confirms this. So we have an insane dramatization where we're trying to reach that center of consciousness with more and more force. Now, what I'm telling you is not theory. This did not come out of theory. This isn't one of Ron's intuitive reflexes at work. They're pretty good, but they didn't dig this one up. I was utterly astonished to discover that a rather bad infection in a person which was almost totally resistant only surrendered when this stable datum went out. Communication's impossible. Fantastic thing. Now, we just didn't do it with hellos and okays to the part. We didn't do that at all. What we did was examine this thing from the standpoint of what would happen if he reached the center of it. Get the slight different pitch, see? We got him to consider this as a problem in communication. Actually, I'd already tried hellos and okays, and they hadn't worked. They hadn't worked because they weren't landing. A little investigation of it discovered immediately that there was no live form of any kind there saying hello or okay. And that the pre-clear himself was not saying hello or okay to the point. But he had some circuit set up someplace that he considered good and dead doing it. What he had was a couple of talk boxes going, and the acknowledgments and the origins weren't even vaguely landing. Well, now one could say we could have gone on like this and eventually made them land. Well, yes, yes, we could have gone on like this and eventually made them land, except for this interesting fact. When we did chew into it a little bit, we started to collapse more somatics on him. And although we might have persevered, and as is the whole thing, what was occurring was that the body areas which were not affected were caving in before the infection. In other words, we could have cured this person very well. It's the throat condition. We could have cured this condition very well by the simple expedient of removing his throat. Now, actually, it wouldn't have been terribly painful to have removed his throat by communication. This is about the only way you could ever as-is anything without liability. You actually could do that. But he'd look awfully silly walking around with his head floating up there above his shoulders and the wind blowing in between his chin and chest. But it became apparent that this great oddity was occurring, that the man's throat was as-ising by communication, but the infection itself was not. And so I sparked long and blue, and I said to myself, not really. The throat is more capable of communication than the infection. So I started asking him how he might go about communicating with this thing. After a short space of time, he informed me that it was impossible to communicate with it. And I started to say, and would have said, if I'd been doing a rather dull job of auditing, I sort of caught myself on the verge of saying, oh, come now, let's not give up, when I realized that this man had not given me a protest. He had told me the postulate, the stable datum in the middle of that infection. Now, on a little further investigation, this interpreted immediately into communication is impossible equals survival is not possible in this universe. And that's the stable datum which lies below the dwindling spiral. Got it? Communication is not possible. Survival is not possible in this universe. Oh boy, we've certainly got a meeting of stable data here. And that's what drives your pre-clear on and on and on and on, trying to find deeper and deeper, more and more hidden significances in his case. He's trying to undercut this fact. And while he can still tick, while he can still communicate, he is seeking to arrest the descent of his beingness against this postulate. Communication is impossible. Survival is impossible in this universe. You know why Thetan comes along here and sticks? And then just sticks. He's saying communication's impossible. And more significantly, and derived from that, he is saying, survival's impossible in this universe. I can't go any further. There is no forward continuance in this universe. All of my brakes are on and locked, and there are rocks under all of my wheels, and a brick wall in front of me, and a collapsing terminal back of it. All communication's impossible, eh? Bad. It's very doubtful if a brick wall can interrupt a real communication. So much so that the brick wall trying is liable to disappear. Unless one is operating on this stable datum, communication's impossible. As far as survival is concerned, how could you possibly help but survive? It's not even a trick. There's an old Greek play whereby a young man is granted immortality. And this young man goes on down through the next millennia. And at first he's very happy with it. He stays young, he stays beautiful, and all of his friends start to age, and he doesn't like this. And they get older and older, and then they all die. He doesn't like this at all. And he finally, at the end of the millennia, is begging for mortality against the horror of immortality. And so it is to a large degree with the Thetan. He sails along. He says, oh, no. All this confounded survival. I've got a new idea. I live only once. Well, that is a nice, happy idea. That's a wonderful idea. I'm stuck with it. But having made this, it is but a short walk to this one. Survival in this universe is impossible. That's a very short stroll. when he makes up his mind to that entirely, he has also made up his mind to the fact that communication's impossible, and actually one stems from the other. Now, I said this young Greek's friends got old. Well, they probably were more difficult to talk to. And when they died, he couldn't talk to them at all. And when communication became impossible, immortality became insupportable. So it's as easy as that. How does one take apart this riddle? Well, this riddle comes apart as though it were hung together with post office glue. Nothing much to it. Communication is not impossible. There is no final inability to communicate. This is a bottomless sink. You could get into less and less ability to communicate, but you could never attain communication as totally impossible. It's something like going from here to Belfast. You could go halfway to Belfast and stop and then go halfway to Belfast and then stop and go halfway to Belfast, you know, the remaining distance, and then stop and go halfway the remaining distance to Belfast and stop and go halfway the remaining distance to Belfast. You know you'd never get into Belfast? You'd never arrive at all. Well, it's one of those things, because communication on a being that cannot help but survive could never become impossible. And yet he can operate on the postulate that it's impossible. And if he operates on the postulate it's impossible, he's sunk. One of the ways it becomes impossible is that communication can only be performed along these certain regimented lines. Communication can only occur with the following formula. All right, now we have the highest agreed upon formula. And it must be the highest agreed upon formula because all kinds of things, well, there might be a better one, but there might be another one in existence. But it's certainly pretty high because it as-is-es all of these screens and so forth that hang around a fellow. It might as-is his body first, but it'll get the screen sooner or later. Now, we have arrived here at a much more important point than you would commonly suppose. The only I don't know that is terribly important is I don't know where the communication terminal is, and therefore communication to it is impossible. Do you know that if somebody doesn't know your address exactly, he won't write to you, even though he could write to an address where the letter would get to you? Are you aware of that? You say, well, I'm going over to France, and why don't you write me in care of Jack over there? And I don't know exactly where I'll be, but if you forward my letter, I'll be in touch with him, and he'll send them on. And you are over in France for some little time, and you get in touch with the Salon de Scientologie or something, and you get in touch with him, and you got any mail for me, you say it. He says, no. Does that mean you have no friends left? No, that isn't what that means. That means that your friends decided that an indirect line to you made communication impossible because they didn't know exactly where you were. So therefore, they weren't going to talk to you because they couldn't. And yet you provided your lines. Most fantastic things occur, for instance, when I come over here from America. Do you know it's only about 2 days by direct airmail over here? It's only about 2 days, at the most 3. It's not any post distance at all. Stuff's going flip, flip, back and forth. The only thing it ever gets in your road is that notorious ridge called customs, if you have something that you want to send through. Of course, the way to really as is customs, just keep sending things through customs. They'll disappear. And, but as far as information, greetings, and that sort of thing's concerned, or even checks and finances concerned, why, you can get around it somehow. Flip, flip. 2-3 days. Why, good heavens, when you're in the States and in Chicago, People write you ordinarily by first-class mail, and it takes longer than that to write in New York, Chicago, you know. And it certainly takes about twice as long to write first-class from New York to Los Angeles. And when I'm over in the States, everybody here says, well, he's gone, you know. Now, they never write me anything about anything. He's gone. But this is a great oddity. If I tell people exactly where I am, you see, if I say, well, there is a road here, 163, and you go up that road a few blocks, and right there by the traffic signal, and so on, you turn to the left, and you go about four doors on the north side of the street, and I live on the third floor, see? And I'll get mail. Isn't this odd? The funny part of it is that in America particularly, people stop communicating with the Hazi to a marked degree if I am not exactly there. And that's a great oddity. And knowing this, why, I have put up a little preventer. There are three or four guys in the organization whose names are getting better known by people, you see. Dave is a very splendid instructor, and they're very happy that Dave is there, and they know he has my confidence, and I have his, and so on, and if things get too tough, they'll write Dave, you know. It's an interesting thing, but there's a live terminal there, the location of which they know. But we've been doing better than that. The most well-known location in America is the Washington Monument, and so we've engaged upon a campaign, which you will see more of, simply showing the Washington Monument on every piece of mail we have, you see. And there's a terminal to shoot at, of one kind or another, even if it isn't live. Maybe it's filled with the spirit of Washington or something, but here's a problem in live terminals. Well, here's your problem in communication, and this is the basic explanation of why, when you don't get mail. People don't know the exact location of you. If you merely say you're in San Francisco or London, they know these are big places. You know. But this is why people frantically send each other these ridiculous postal cards. Having wonderful time, wish you were here, X marks my room. If you started to call the mail, it was pouring through the post office during the summertime in the United States, and I'm sure in Great Britain, too, there'd be an enormous number of these pictures of hotels and summer resorts with little X's on them. Now, if this is the bottom of the dwindling spiral, why, we have arrived south. See this? If this is the bottom of the dwindling spiral, we have arrived south. Would there be any further south that you could go? Well, there might be, but we would never have anything to do with it because we couldn't communicate with it anyhow, even if it did exist, but we never would have communicated with it if it did exist, so it couldn't influence us. We would only find a difficulty in communicating with things that we knew we had communicated with. Now, we have all communicated with, one time or another, an impossibility to communicate. Let me give you that. That's well within our experience, isn't it? That's right. That's well within our experience. Why is it that someone goes into a decline the moment that he discovers somebody dead? You know, he says, dead. Well, he can't any longer communicate with him. He doesn't know where the terminal is. He thinks. But I wonder if this isn't just an agreement. I'm sure it is. Now, we know by running past devs and by experience with preclears on exteriorization and a few of us by having been knocked off or almost knocked off in this lifetime, that when you're dead, you don't hang around inside back of the ridges. You go flip, and then you say, I have no further responsibility for it, which is the same as I am now forgetting it all. And there it is. One of the more fantastic things that can occur to somebody is to die while he is alive. It sounds remarkable, but it sounds like I'm mixing speech, but I am not mixing speech. This is a rather common experience. Almost anybody has had this happen to him in some lifetime. And some of the worst chronic somatics that you will run into in a preclear stem from a former life departure from the body before death or while death was ensuing, and then a return to that body. Why are these chronic somatics? Well, they're an incomprehensibility. The fellow backed out and says, I'm dead, and then found himself alive. And he's been curious about it ever since. He hasn't made up his mind that he was still alive. You know, you live in a twilight. You know, you were convinced you were dead, but you didn't decide you were again alive. Now, I know where I'm speaking of. There's a fellow with a name, I think his name's Pelley, in the United States, had this remarkable experience and ran into some area and got a lot of information, but not a between lives area, another type of area. Got a lot of information, and he wrote a number of books on it. He's dead now again. And some people down in Virginia, these people down in Virginia, still put out his literature. Very good thing. I mean, nice guy. But he had this fantastic experience, and he considered it quite novel, as one would, I suppose. But in Dianetic backtrack searching, I found an astonishing number of people had at one time or another had this happen to them. And more people than you would think have had it happen to them in this lifetime. But they try to tell people about it, and then people say, oh, no, no. Everybody knows you live but once. Dialectic materialism, modern science, dialectic materialism. And they say, no communication. So they don't talk about it any longer. It's too easy to re-stimulate it as a non-communication, you see. So the tiniest discouragement just knocks them out of it. They don't talk about it then. They don't tell you. As a matter of fact, I myself became rather diffident at talking about this sort of thing. It wasn't too much of a shock or a surprise to me. It was not at all too much of a shock or surprise. For the excellent reason that I'd been very clearly aware of not living in a body for an awfully long time. Matter of fact, I think first time I ever reached into a body or had anything to do with the innards of a body at all was when I was about 16. I could never get excited about Indian philosophers and so forth because I was already doing what they were so sure was the right thing to do that I became unbearably cocky. You know, you walk into the temple that you're supposed to take your shoes off of at the door, and you'd kick your shoes off and walk in, and you'd say, well, hiya, how you doing? They very easily mistake this much insouciance and this much cockiness as something that must be quite godlike or something, you know. Something's wrong here. This fellow has not demonstrated the exact amount of reverence that he should demonstrate on this subject. I had an awful hard time trying to find out what they were talking about or why they were excited about it, see? I didn't know they didn't know. You get that bad bridge? So when many years afterwards I kicked the bucket on an operating table, which I did suddenly, and went around in a few circles and spirals and was groggy enough to hit the between lives area, and came back and said to hell with it and grabbed my body more or less by the hair of its head and snapped it to and says, get going, you know, and so on. Again, it didn't make much of an impression. I didn't sit around saying, good heavens, this is horrible and awful. I just said, this is regrettable, but I found out at that moment that you couldn't talk about it. Just to make casual conversation, in actuality, just to make casual conversation, I mentioned it a few times in the ensuing months, you know. After all, remember this, I was a writer. A writer deals with experiences and strange ones, preferably strange ones. And I'd had a strange experience, so I wanted to say something about it, you know. Conversation had languished and something like that, and I felt I could electrify people by saying, you know, well, I remember very well when I died. And expected them to be quite alert about it all. It's not a funny gag. Nobody believed me about this thing at all. Nobody believed me at all. Nobody wanted to pursue it. Nobody wanted to talk about it. So I never say anything about this. But this isn't very peculiar, because I did the same thing during the war. I got blown up against a bulkhead when some ash cans exploded and got kind of plastered all over things, and then realized nobody else on the ship could navigate and picked the body up again. This was not a difficult thing, and got it turning over again, tickety-tick. But by this time, I was absolutely sure I had better keep my mouth shut, because now I was in an heretical and barbaric organization known as the Navy. And it didn't listen to such things without immediately sending for psychiatrists or something. But by this time, it was old hat. It was thoroughly old hat. I mean, it was something that just happens. And it didn't occur to me till 1951, late in 51 and early in 52, to ask any preclears if this had happened to them, because I was so sure that it had. And, of course, we picked up an enormous amount of data. One of the very famous cases of no recovery in Dianetics, a girl who was crippled on crutches, wearing braces on her legs. I finally got interested enough in this case to put her on an E-meter and pick up what was wrong with her, and found out that she had died in, I think, 1859, if I remember rightly, something like that. And she was swimming off the beach, and a wave hit her, knocked her out a bit, and killed her dead. And she went back to a between lives area, and they noticed she was back there, and they said, all right, let's settle down. And all of a sudden, wham, she went back into her body again on this planet. And she was very upset by this, and nobody'd listen to her. She had died, and nobody would listen. And evidently, she made, for a short time, quite a thing out of this, trying to tell people, and they wouldn't listen. And so she was stuck with it. See why she was stuck with it? She couldn't communicate it. Got it? And she must have been kind of having a hard time along about that time anyway, or this wouldn't have thrown her so thoroughly. Well, I found this on the time track, and without her belief in past lives and against her protest on the whole thing, took the chronic somatic out of her back that nobody'd ever been able to touch, and straightened out, to a marked degree, her spine. And after that, she did a little walking. She wasn't cured or anything like this, but I knocked this thing out. I made her communicate about it, you see, covertly with an E-meter, and produced this rather rigorous miracle. Wasn't a very full, complete miracle. It was just the fact she was no longer in pain all the time and did have a straighter spine. Legs still in bad shape. But this is an oddity that had picked this up on the back track, and suddenly I got a little interested in this, a little more interested in this, and as this was about the 25th case I'd run into that had died during this lifetime, why, I said, that's interesting now. Can it be that people don't know they can exteriorize? 1952. Well, for Christ's sakes. No wonder these commies and their dialectic materialism act like a bunch of jerks. No wonder all those dopes in India were being so sincere about sitting there so long. They were waiting to blow out of their heads. Well, why didn't they just move back out of their heads? With great astonishment, I found out they had lost the ability to do so. Well, how could they possibly have lost the ability to do so? And that is the story of the research of the last 3 years. How could they possibly have lost the ability to do so? Well, they didn't know how, did they? Assuming there was a how, right?
Yes.
They didn't know how, because they assumed there was a how. They had long since ceased to talk about it. So it had become a big don't know. It was not a matter of free discussion. And more important than that, they knew it was impossible to communicate in any other way than with their eyes and voices. So that requesting them to go back of their heads was requesting them to assume that communication was impossible. And this is death. And their personal memory of the life just passed shut off because of the postulate, as they went out of their heads, communication is impossible. They know that eyes, nose, mouth, neurons are absolutely necessary to communication. This is the consideration. So therefore, the moment you do not have eyes, nose, mouth, neurons, communication is impossible. So there is the postulate. So they go out of their heads and communication becomes so impossible that although nobody ever really remembers with energy, they cease to remember, they've just lived. And that is the extinction of personal memory on death, which is a new and recent thing. It hasn't been going on for more than 1,000 years or so. But personal memory goes zip on death. Now, the reasons the Christians got so thoroughly excited about the kingdom of heaven is they thought they were being given a new destination instead of that damn between lives area. And probably their basic concept of hell was the between lives area where they'd report in and get zapped. At least communication was possible. They got zapped, didn't they? So communication would become impossible in the body, so they'd go to an area where communication was possible if painful. And I think that what they were following was an advance agent about a new between lives area where people didn't zap you very hard. And I think that's what all the shooting was about, but it has certainly been obscured during the last 2 millennia. I think the shooting was about that. And now people don't even know that they go through the between lives area or anything else. They just go, they're just a solid don't know, you see. Now, how does a don't know come about? A don't know comes about first by consideration. It's part of the game. But it comes about secondly in a very amusing way. In order to know, you have to communicate. You can only know by communication. And so there's the bridge between communication and being ecstatic. Communication is lower scale than simply being ecstatic. So communication is the first method of knowing. You have to know something, and you use communication to know the something. Now, understand, you don't have to do that, see? But you have to say that you don't know before you use communication to know. And there's where the don't know postulate comes in. And communication sets in with the first look. You see, here's Thetan, knows everything, getting along fine. Now, in order to communicate, sounds very peculiar because he doesn't have to communicate at all. But he thinks up this nice game. Now he's going to say, I don't know, and then he's going to go into communication, and communication as is his energy. Because energy got there because of the peculiarities and particularities and difficulties of communication. It's something to communicate with and about. And you can define energy as precisely that. Energy is something with which to communicate and about which to communicate. It gives you something to do. And naturally, since energy is there for the purposes of communication or non-communication, communication, therefore, as is energy. It's as simple as this. But when you are communicating, you are also assuming that you don't know. And you have to assume that you don't know in order to communicate. So communication and don't know are assumed simultaneously. In the bridge between native state and communicatingness is, of course, don't know. And the hand companion to communication is don't know. And if you don't know, then you don't communicate. But if you don't know, then you can communicate. Get that slippy one? See, it's not a logical equation because it exists above the level of logic. And there we really knocked on a door. See, in order to know, you have to communicate. In order to communicate, you have to don't know. So they both add up to don't know. But they also both add up to know. So it doesn't equate. There is no equation possible, simply because it is a contradictory state of affairs. And that is the basic confusion and is what confusion is. And the formula of confusion is, to communicate, it is necessary not to know first. To communicate, one knows. After one has communicated, one knows. Communication brings about knowingness. Don't knowingness brings about communication. That's one of these idiotic things. Now you know that if 2 equals 1 plus 1, then 1 plus 1 equals 2, don't you? And that's logic. But this says that if you don't know, you communicate. And if you communicate, you know. Well, now that almost is logical, except it's statable the other way, too. If you know, you communicate. If you communicate, you don't know. Now, how did it fit that way around? Well, it fits that way around with the greatest of ease. Wonderful way to get stupid is only to find out things by communication. And if you were going around finding everything out by communication only, boy, you'd certainly wind up stupid. But you have to know the whereabouts of a terminal before you can communicate, but you have to have assumed you didn't know in order to communicate at all. You get this horrible tangle. Well, it's a horrible tangle, and don't try to get logical about it because it's not logical, because that is the anatomy of confusion, the interplay between communication and not knowingness. Knowingness and non-communication and so forth brings about confusion. Now, how would knowingness bring about non-communication? Well, that's with the greatest of ease. You know that if you communicate with something, it's going to do something bad, which is another consideration. So the thing to do is not to communicate. And you know that. That's the smart thing to do, not communicate. Oh, that's the dumbest thing there is in the world. You've already assumed all these other things, you see. So now you assume that now that you know, you mustn't communicate. It hurt you. It was bad, and it led to a bad result by your evaluation, so therefore you better not communicate with it anymore. And that doesn't, as is, a bit of energy, that kind of knowingness, because it's knowingness about something. Got it? All it does is cut the communication line, which will now, as is, energy, which leaves a person stuck points all along the track. Points where he knows, so he no longer has to communicate. And whether he knows something bad or whether he knows something good, it no longer is necessary for him to communicate. And the lack of necessity to communicate is the upper harmonic on the impossibility of communication. If you were to ask somebody, what don't you have to communicate about? He would pick up an awful lot of things up and down the track. That is victory. Somebody is the winner. He's the winner now. He doesn't have to talk to any of the losers. Get the idea? So he shut off his consideration about communication. Well, that is a confusion, and the tolerance of that confusion is the key to cases. The tolerance of the confusion. Completely aside from anything else. An individual can't tolerate this confusion. He won't communicate with this confusion. And we're doing the doggondest thing that anybody ever did. We are not only communicating with this confusion, We are simply dissecting it and laying it out very carefully in categories. What greater contempt can there be than vivisection? But it becomes expressible at all is impossible. See, it's impossible to express it. Everybody knows that. And yet I've just got through expressing it. So it isn't impossible at all. It isn't possible to fail to express it, as a matter of fact. It isn't necessary that you communicate in all directions, at all times, and so forth, madly. But on the upper harmonic, theoretically, you could know everything and therefore be in communication with everything. See? Theoretically, and just suddenly say, well, I know all about it, wham, and all your ridges would disappear. Well, the funny part of it is you can do that on gradients. One of the, it's axiom 51, yes. Postulates as is messed. Postulates do as is messed. You just keep putting a live postulate in the mess. Live postulate, live postulate, live postulate, live postulate, and boom. I call to your attention the fact that a coal deposit will exist for a long time until somebody puts the postulate in it that it's burnable, and the coal deposit disappears. Now, that's mechanically. That's mechanical by a bunch of vias. A car starts to disappear one way or the other when you start to throw enough affection and so forth. That I found this out very early with a racing car. I used to have a racing car that every time, this was really a gag, gives you an idea. Every time I would say, boy, is this little buggy really wheeling today, you know? Clank. Something would happen to it. So I found out the only way to handle that particular car was saying, this broken down, moth-eaten, rusted piece of junk has the life expectancy of a snowball in Hades. You know? Ran? It had so much affection thrown at it, evidently, that it had to be cussed in order to get it solid again. Its name was Mandy. Anyway. Here we have the region of confusion, and people who think they cannot communicate with this region in any way, shape, or form, then go into apathy about it and get an impossibility of communicating with the modus operandi of the universe. And as soon as they're unable or unwilling or considered impossible to communicate with the modus operandi of this particular universe, they are, of course, then unalterably trapped in it, because the two things that will as is their condition in it, and the universe too, are total knowingness, which is really more or less unattainable. It's just a state, you see. It's not something you attain. And communication. So knowingness in communication will solve anybody's problems in the universe as long as you remember that he also has to be able to understand, get that understand, not knowingness and non-communication. You see, it's a franticness about non-communication that makes it bad. It isn't doing you a bit of harm right now not to communicate with Nelson's Monument. But if you frantically wanted to communicate with Nelson's Monument and you were not communicating with it and you couldn't communicate with it at this moment, believe me, it would become aberrative. Things would start getting solid around the whole subject. So you have to make a postulate every time that you don't know and that you're non-communicating in order to communicate. Therefore, the key factors which must be understood are communication, non-communication, and above that level, know and not know. And the bottom of the barrel is not only just don't know, it's can't know. And can't know adds up to impossible to communicate. which is the basic stable trap datum. That's the stable datum that leads to the trap. Impossible to communicate. And this adds up also to impossible to survive in this universe. And this particular factor itself, the last one I enumerated, is one of the most important stable data for making a person frantic. He's been told so often, he believes so much, he's told so many people that it's impossible to survive under these circumstances that he himself believes it too. So he then has to make his postulate good, so he goes to work making it impossible for him to survive. It's very simple. Now, as we look over this scene of knowingness and not knowingness and communicatingness and not communicatingness, we actually don't find a single danger in it anywhere. And that is the curse of the whole thing. Unless you dream up these confusions and put them into action, there is nothing to come back, because nothing of any kind can ever hurt a Thetan. Nothing can happen to a Thetan. He can make himself remember and make himself forget. He can seal himself in. He can get himself stuck to and tangled up with. But in the final analysis, if the whole universe were to blow up, every Thetan in it would be free. He wouldn't have any game at all. What we're trying to do is hold a level of game, above which there's no game, below which there's no game. But it's a mighty wide band in which you can have a game. And the final postulate at the bottom is can't survive in this universe, which is can't have any game, which is also, communication is impossible. And the top of it is survival is inevitable. Communication is unnecessary. Knowingness is something that must be cut down in order to give us enough not knowingness so that we will get communication. Now, these are the various factors with which you're working in any case. That's the bottom of the dwindling spiral, so you can stop digging. A lot of cases I run into remind me of gophers, except a gopher's got enough sense to stop when he gets to the bottom of the hole. These cases reach the bottom of the hole and go on south. They're trying to get something to communicate with them across the postulate that it's impossible to communicate. But in view of the fact that what they're trying to communicate with is the postulate impossible to communicate with, it will never communicate with them. So, in ordinary course of human events, they never find out. But we are not in the ordinary course of human events. We have exceeded them for some time. Thank you.